From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So The Media Project is here, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and we try to offer also insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union of Albany, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
How'd you do?
How'd you do? That's what he always says. I know what that means. And here is Kaylin Brown, head of journalism and communications at the College of St. Rose.
Word.
Exactly. Precisely. You know, that it's interesting how these expressions take wing. Like, word, that's something that emerged like a couple years ago, and it means...
It did. It means, yes, truism.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
I have gotten interested in more language usage because of a show called The Wire, which I came to very late, but I'm rewatching parts of it about the newspaper industry, and they have a part about the Baltimore Sun in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a complete other dialect and other use of language in that program, which is fascinating.
Yeah, it takes a while to get used to it, like listening to a movie from Australia or Ireland, you know, it takes a while to get into it. Even Shakespeare, you have to listen for a while before you get the hang of it. Or Chartok, you know, once you get to know Chartok language, all you have to do is say, how'd you do? And you know what he means.
Yeah, he had there's a subtext to that greeting.
I've trained you all that my mother would walk down the streets on Fire Island, and if somebody she really didn't like would pass her and say something, hello, Shirley, and she would say, how'd you do?
That's all there is to it. Anyway, so we come now to the highest paid individual in television news, which would make that person the highest paid individual in American journalism. That would be Matt Lauer of the Today Show, fired now for inappropriate sexual behavior with a subordinate. Subsequent to his firing, it was revealed that there was more than one subordinate involved. That on the same day then came the firing of Garrison Keillor for some sort of inappropriate behavior, fired by Minnesota Public Radio, the details of which we do not know.
Well, we know a little. We know what he says.
Ah.
He says now that a woman who was standing next to him had just been talking about how uncomfortable she was about something or other, and he wanted to comfort her, so he put his hand down her back, an open back, and 6 inches below whatever. So that's what he says.
Whatever matters.
Huh.
Whatever matters. Where was the hand and what was the hand doing?
I just don't remember.
But it does matter. A greeting when you say hello to someone and maybe put your hand on their shoulder as a term of endearment a signifier of endearment, a gesture, is different than a sexual overture.
You know, I know this journalism professor at a college here, and in other words, you, who has said to me that when somebody starts quizzing her about why this thing has gone too far or something, she says, yes, but what would I tell my daughter?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that matters. What would I tell my daughter? We were talking about a since dethroned politician in your office earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are certain behaviors that we don't want our daughters to have to be subjected to. And we're hoping for a better and more equal playing field for them when they get into the workforce. Even before that, of course. But I would hope that my daughter would not be... I don't even like to talk about it. It's upsetting to me to think about that someone would prey on my daughter.
We have somebody who's working around here who also has a second job. And somebody came up to her and started massaging her in the workplace, started massaging her shoulders. And
sort of like George W. Bush did Angela Merkel, right?
Is that right?
Yeah. Don't you remember that? That the first meeting of the heads of state, George W. Bush came up, when there were a bunch of heads of state sitting around, he came up and was massaging the back of Angela Merkel. It was an uncomfortable exchange between the American president and the German
leader. This is the first George or the second George W. Or George III, who was the mad king of England.
Yes,
and
revolted indeed.
Against.
He was. I mean, this is widespread, and the reporting will continue. And we have
But you haven't been putting it on the front page of the of your paper.
Well, we don't put much national news on the front page. We put references, or reefers as we call them, to the stories inside. Garrison Keillor was on the front page because there was a local connection. That is, he was to have appeared in the Berkshires under the sponsorship of WAMC, yes, on the very day, bad timing, that this was revealed. So that became a front page story. But we've had, you know, other front page stories about allegations of sexual harassment, most recently involving the recently elected Rensselaer County executive, Steve McLaughlin, assembly member. We did a big story during his campaign for county executive about allegations that he roughed up an aide. And then subsequently, we had tape recordings of his vulgar conversations with her. So we did stories about that, which he denounced. And now he's denouncing our coverage of separate, indeed entirely separate, allegations raised that went before the Assembly Ethics Committee.
Okay, so let me ask you guys a question. And I know that I'm going to get hell for it, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What motivates newspapers and others to do this kind of thing? Is the motivation that we want to even the playing fields so that our daughters will be safer in the society? Or is it because sex sells?
It's not because sex sells. If there are misdeeds by a politician. Yes, I am sure.
I'm absolutely sure of it. Why do you air these stories on WAMC? How dare you? It just because you just draw attention, right? That's why you put them on the air.
Editors don't make decisions about what stories are going to play based on whether it will sell newspapers. I've never seen that happen, and I've worked at 4 different newspapers. The reason that editors make decisions about how stories will play has to do with the content and context of the story. Is this story valuable to our readers, our listeners, our viewers, however it's being delivered? And will they get some information to help them make decisions about how to lead their lives?
Yeah. I associate myself with the remarks.
You guys always
do.
you guys always do. You know, I knew a guy, a little pompous. He was a PhD, but he would always say, I see. I see.
So these are, you know, it's important if we believe.
Are you talking about yourself?
If we believe that sexual harassment, or believe the term that is.
The AP said misconduct, I think. They're going to call it sexual misconduct.
Misconduct is a more encompassing word choice. And so that seems to be. If we believe that this is wrong, that people shouldn't behave this way, then it is newsworthy for us to report about that when it involves prominent individuals.
Okay, but it's not Joe Schmolke you're going after. It's Matt Lauer or Garrison Keillor, who, frankly, it was the basis of a good deal of the success that public radio has had.
But Joe Schmolke is not newsworthy. I mean, obviously, when behavior so far crosses the line that it becomes newsworthy in itself, homicide.
Well, that's
rape,
the point. That is the point.
Yeah, but harassment or misconduct is newsworthy in the context of someone who is known.
Well, let me just take this a little bit further. First of all, I want to say, out there, there's probably somebody named Joe Schmolke, but I made that name up. I just want you to know that there was no any coincidence to somebody living or dead is purely coincidental. But I also think that positioning, Rex, you're right. If it's Matt Lauer as the number one guy in America who gets paid the most and who everybody watches on the Today Show, obviously there's going to be an interest in somebody like that.
Yeah.
Well, proportionality matters, and that's another thing that gets talked about in the book. I keep referencing Elements of Journalism, that proportionality matters. A story plays in a position in the newspaper based on the reach it has. And
what reach?
The Today Show has millions of viewers, and Lauer had a huge audience, ergo coverage of what has happened is exponentially greater.
I'd love to hear from our listeners to check in on this, whether they think you guys are full of it or whether I'm right. And how would
you're
they do?
Right about what? What's your point?
My point is that sex sells, and that anything that's sexual goes over big with the American people, despite what could only be described as a spirited defense by both of you, a man and a woman, on this issue.
But we're not refuting that sex doesn't sell. We're not saying sex doesn't sell. We're saying that's not how decisions are made or about how to position stories on newscasts or in a broadsheet or a tabloid, whatever the case may be.
I'm fascinated by your line of argumentation, to be perfectly honest with you, because just because you worked on all of these newspapers doesn't mean you were in a psychoanalytic position to tell why the editors...
So, Alan, why? By the way, media@wamc.org. media@wamc.org is how you respond to Alan's request for your input. And why do you air these stories on WAMC?
Well, we air them because of somebody like Garrison Keillor is a huge part of our, of what we do.
No, you do it because sex sells and it brings donations to WAMC.
You couldn't be more wrong.
And I see. You do it for righteous reasons and we do not. That's
pompous and condescending of you.
But don't you feel a responsibility to our listeners to make sure they're aware of what has happened with Mr. Keillor and the fact that he is now in a different position than he had been when he was in good graces?
Well, you guys were sitting in my office, or Rex wasn't, but you were, when I played you a message from a guy who was adamant about getting this back on the air, and you, Alan Ken, and you should call Jesse Ventura. I don't exactly understand Jesse the Body Ventura. Because he's out from out there in Minnesota.
Call Jesse Ventura.
Yeah. Anyway, there are a lot of people upset about this.
Oh, about him being taken off. Yeah, about
his... Understandably, yeah. He had a loyal following.
Well, he also had, I'm sorry to say this, an excellent show. I mean, his Writer's Almanac was one of the finest things. And I, frankly, don't love everything that we always do, but I would make it a point to be there when that show was on.
Yeah.
And yet, when I was asked to introduce him at this event that we were talking about, I said, no, I'm not going to do it.
I don't think the Writer's Almanac is diminished by the fact that Keillor is now no longer with NPR. I think those things are not in tandem. I think that he can have been on a good show, he can have produced a good show and delivered a good show, and still have to no longer deliver that show.
So the question is, by the way, just who owns the rights to that? The
show is NPR. Minnesota Public Radio are the ones who pull the cord.
Okay.
Not NPR. People are writing
M as in Mary. Yeah,
so will they find another host, and will the program continue with somebody else doing it, or does
apparently, and I did hear an interesting story on this on NPR, which made the point that there could be some real problems here because Keillor owns the intellectual content.
That's it.
And all of the key words on the shows.
That was my question,
shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so not so easy to just say you're out, X is in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And they're going to change the name of Prairie Home Companion, the program that he originated and he got his hand-picked successor, now still airs on this station and a lot of other NPR stations. So a lot of these stories, by the way, in handling stories of sexual misconduct, the word that AP has decided, the phrasing of it is really important. And Pointer, which is a journalism think tank, has a woman named Ann Glover who works there on editing and leadership.
One of the Pointer sisters.
And she has listed some words to think about, which, you know, if you're a journalist writing about these issues or editing, the phrasing of this, using words like misdeeds or transgressions or wrongdoing, you know, you have to be very precise in your language so that you neither minimize nor overstate what is actually at hand.
Nevertheless, no matter what word you use, somebody on any side of this debate will take offense.
Yeah.
And so you know that. You're prepared for that as you go into it. Kaylee, you're looking at me as if I'm wrong about that. Am I?
No, not at all. My mind was moving on to our president and the Sean Hannity story because I saw a connection there.
What's that?
Just Hannity's story that's going to appear in the cover of the New York Times Magazine, which is already released, and his alignment with the president and his word choices and his incendiary decisions to excite his audience, which is also a huge audience. I think that Hannity, from what I read in the Times article, is in a position to influence a lot of people's thinking, and he uses words that absolutely incite anger and fear.
Can you just help me with this, because I didn't read the article, what some of those words might be that you could use on the radio without losing our license?
Well, it's just hot terms in the context of sex, you know. Just when you say that somebody claimed something as opposed to said or did, you're implying
they were lying.
Right.
And Rex, I know that you know this story. I've heard a clip at one point in which somebody called in his show and was on a different side than he was, and he called him, "Get off my phone, you idiot!"
Well, that is typical. You know, these programs have screeners,
of course,
so that they only have people who like them. And even on local talk radio here, the guys hang up on people who object to them. They start the talk radio hosts on these right-wing radio stations start screaming back at people who disagree with them and belittle them. And of course, they own the microphone. So it is easy for them to just cut somebody off and then denounce them. So
unlike here, where you and Professor Brown are on one side and I'm on the other.
And we do our very best to try to level the playing field, valiantly striving for truth.
Valiantly is right.
The Media Project, Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, and Rex Smith here from WAMC in Albany, New York. If you are listening to this somewhere out around the country, you can share your thoughts at media@wamc.org. Hannity is, by the way, the most popular program on cable. It's a huge program, and Hannity is getting rich off it. He makes about $36 million a year, which is more, by the way, than Matt Lauer was being paid. And it is entirely supportive, currently, of Donald Trump.
Right? And in fact, the Times story talks about Hannity is setting the agenda for our president, as opposed to perhaps the other way around. So Hannity comes up with theories about why things are the way they are, and then the president jumps on what Hannity has to say.
Well, it's important that, you know, I'm the only political scientist in the room, but it's important for you guys to know that that agenda is backed by a lot of money, lot of money. And if the president is only down to 36% or something like that in terms of his popularity, that's still a lot of people.
Yes.
And you know, if those people are saying, as a group, we're going to watch Fox or we're going to listen to Hannity, that's a lot of people with a lot of disposable income, and that's the way it is.
And I think Kaylin's point is right, that Fox News influences the president as much as vice versa. You know, we know that the president spends hours watching Fox and Friends in the morning. We've never had a president who is so glued to the television, apparently, and who will tweet stuff that they say. He'll respond to what he sees on TV and immediately tweet it out to the world. And ordinarily, I would think that broadcasters, news people would be very cautious then, knowing that, with the information they put out. Maybe they are at Fox and Friends. Maybe they just have different standards.
Well, maybe they're a house organ, as we say.
Well, initially, Hannity had said in public that he was not a journalist. And it's evolved into him saying he is an advocacy journalist, to pick up on a theme we discussed a week or so ago. Mm. But I would say that characterizing him and or Matt Lauer as journalists is not exactly accurate. I would not characterize either of these individuals as journalists. I would characterize them as entertainers and, to varying degrees, talk show hosts.
But if they present the news or discussing it, I mean, is the guy who writes the editorials for the New York Times, is she, or is that woman a journalist, a true journalist?
Yes. The thing is that makes it difficult is that Matt Lauer is paid by the news department, or he was. I mean, the Today Show is a production of the news division. And, you know, Kaylin and I know Alan would say, well, you're so self-righteous.
Yes,
I'm trying to do my Shark Talk voice. So self-righteous. And we...
How do you do?
How'd you do? And we... But the fact is, you know, I'm going to go, you know, my next meeting after this taping is to discuss the opportunity to put more puzzles in the Times Union. So I'm the guy who picks the comics, and I can't get too carried away with self-righteousness on this, right?
I understand. Oh, my most well-read stories were the stories from Saratoga Springs and went kicking and screaming to this assignment to cover the rich and famous up at the track for a couple of summers. And I did meet the eventual president who refused to shake my hand because he was a germaphobe, allegedly. So that's my memory of him.
Wow.
But people paid more attention to the work I did up there, which I didn't want to do, but I was asked to do it, than covering poverty, covering human rights issues in the city of Albany, and I did not get nearly the attention. Not that it's about me, but my stories did not get nearly the attention.
Well, that's why we have the Media Project, which we're on right now, so that we can hash out these issues.
Yes, a very good idea. Great opportunity. And, you know, one of the reasons that I recall this when we sent you up to cover Saratoga, you were a real news reporter. You were subsequently followed in that assignment by Kate Grenette, a real news reporter. We wanted somebody who had reporting chops to do this sort of social assignment so that we would actually get news up there, too, so that it wouldn't be just all fluffy. I'm doing my
little. You know,
it felt really fluffy, especially breaking the story about Mary Lou Whitney getting engaged to John Hendrickson, which actually created quite a stir.
I'll bet it did.
But only up in that world of, you know, glitz and gems and long gowns.
But you broke the story.
But still, I
have a great deal of problems with this whole unctuous business of who's a journalist and who's not. Rex has just come up with a profound description. If you're paid by the news department, you're a journalist. And then I go to some of the more inflammatory newspapers, if you want to use that term, who employ people who, you know, might make stuff up. And they take great exception to, for example, my being called a journalist because, you know, I influence journalism. I think everybody's a journalist who says they're a journalist. That's what I think.
Well, I would kind of draw the line at that. But I mean, I don't think you need to be quite that black and white about it. But I do agree that, you know, when you look at Matt Lauer, he's got more in common with Colbert as a program host and entertainer than he does with us.
So what?
Reporters.
I mean, so what? He's still influencing hundreds and millions of people. And he's doing it by presenting the news in any inflection in any way he does it. And I say the guy's a journalist.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I just don't agree with your bald statement that anybody who says they're a journalist is a journalist. What do you think about
that? Why do you say the word bald?
I still have
a little hair.
What do you think about these people? James O'Keefe, the founder of Project Veritas. You know, this is the outfit that tried to get the story in the Washington Post, a false effort, clearly, to get the Post to bite on a fake story about Roy Moore.
The Washington Post did an excellent job turning the sting around on Project Veritas,
Thank God.
And recognizing that this was a bait and this was an effort to discredit the Post and to discredit the stories they had written.
Just remind everybody.
Particularly about Roy Moore.
Just remind everybody what it was, that they had come with somebody who claimed to have some damaging information.
A woman named Jamie Phillips contacted the Post and said that she was one of Roy Moore's young teenage victims and that she had an abortion from Moore's child. You know, he had impregnated her. And this woman went to the Post and suggested that she too was a victim. And she kept asking the Post reporters, what is going to be the outcome for Moore's election? If I talk to you about this, the more I'm telling you, do you think it's going to be the cause of him losing the election? Veritas's entire purpose was to try to get the Post to give an opinion.
A false story.
To say on record, on a recording, their opinion about why they were doing this story. So Veritas wanted Post reporters to claim, oh, yes, well, we're hoping this is going to dismiss Moore or he will lose the election as a result of this. Of course, the Post didn't say that because that's not their job, not their intent. And they would never in any instance claim that they had an expectation of the result of this reporting. And it became apparent to the Post reporters who, by virtue of their professionalism and their instincts, recognized that this was a bait and that they were just trying to be embarrassed by this Project Veritas by a guy named O'Keefe.
And what's more, this is a real lesson for every other news gathering agency, right?
Exactly right. Now, not only do news gathering agencies recognize there are people out there baiting them and trying to hurt their reputations, the public learned how reporting happened because the Post did a full story on Veritas, and the public could read and see this is all of the fact-checking and research that goes into producing a story.
If only there would be enough people paying attention to it to know that. But it'll still be distorted by the ilk of Sean Hannity and the others to still attack genuine journalism.
As well as the trolls who write us every day and the same guys every day trying to make as much trouble as possible.
So trouble is over for us just now. The Media Project is done for another week. We thank you for joining us, Kalen Brown, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith. We hope to see you back here next week.
And a big thanks to Pete for singing the song.
Such interesting people, when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kalen Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.